RSVP can be found online, ips-dc.org/events/counteringamericanfascism.
WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
From the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, this is Democracy Now!
If you listen to Alex Jones every day, you would believe that a transnational financial elite controls things in our country, that they hate our society. And oh, by the way, a lot of them are probably sex perverts, too. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, that's actually a hell of a lot more true than Rachel Maddow's view of society.
Those are the words of Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance, speaking in a newly uncovered speech praising conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. We'll speak to ProPublica reporter Andy Kroll. Then we go to the floor of the Republican National Convention to speak with delegates.
You literally tried to shoot our president, right? First you tried to throw him in jail, then you called him a fascist, then you literally tried to strip the Secret Service protection from him, and then you tried to use the deep state to kill the guy.
We'll also speak to a leading immigrant rights activist here in Milwaukee and look at how the Democratic National Committee is pushing for Joe Biden to be confirmed before next month's Democratic National Convention in Chicago, despite growing calls for him to step aside. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. This is War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israeli forces have killed at least 81 Palestinians over the past day, including 42 people in airstrikes on a UN-run school in Nusayrat and on a so-called safe area in Al-Mawasi near Khan Yunis. The Nusayrat attack, which killed at least 23 Palestinians, is at least the eighth time Israel bombed an UNRWA school in the past 10 days. This is a survivor of the Israeli airstrike.
This is a house full of civilians. We were asleep with our children and our little ones. We were safe and sleeping at 2:30 a.m. To be precise, at 2:20 a.m. exactly, we were shocked to feel a rocket fall on the house. What is the sin we have committed for them, the Israelis, for an F-16 to drop a bomb on a residential house, an old house that has been destroyed in this way?
UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, reports 70% of its schools in Gaza have now been bombed and over 500 people who'd taken shelter in them have been killed by Israel since its war on Gaza began October 7th. Separately, UNRWA projected it'll take 15 years to clear the rubble from Israel's destruction of Gaza. Yemen's Houthi movement is continuing its attacks on Red Sea vessels. Houthi fighters targeted a Panama-flagged and Israeli-owned ship, as well as a Liberian-flagged and Marshall Islands-owned oil tanker on the key trade route Monday. No casualties were reported. The Houthi movement says it'll escalate its attacks so long as Israel continues to attack Gaza. Here in Milwaukee, activists and community members have gathered in the streets to condemn the police killing of 43-year-old Milwaukee resident Samuel Sharp. The officers who killed Sharp, an unhoused black veteran, are from Ohio. They're in Wisconsin as part of a group of 4,500 law enforcement officials in Milwaukee for the RNC. But the shooting took place a mile from the RNC's proceedings. Sharp appeared to be in the middle of an altercation with another man when the police officers charged towards him before fatally shooting him. Separately, community members Tuesday rallied outside Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm's house, demanding justice for Devontae Mitchell, the 43-year-old black father who was killed by security guards who pinned him to the ground outside the Hyatt Regency Hotel in downtown Milwaukee last month. In more news from Milwaukee, anti-immigrant hate speech and misinformation about the U.S.-Mexico border took center stage on the second day of the Republican National Convention. Several of Donald Trump's former rivals took to the stage, including former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, and Vivek Ramaswamy. Many lashed out at Vice President Kamala Harris, saying she and Biden have enforced open border policies that have led to a wave of what Trump's campaign describes as a migrant crime epidemic. Meanwhile, Senator Cruz claimed immigrants kill U.S. citizens every damn day, he said. There's no data linking immigrants to rising crime. Many remarks also scapegoated asylum seekers for the smuggling of fentanyl across the southern border. Evidence shows fentanyl is largely smuggled by U.S. citizens across U.S. ports of entry. We'll have more on the RNC later in the broadcast. In New York, a federal jury Tuesday convicted New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez of corruption on all 16 counts he faced. The disgraced Democrat, once head of the powerful Senate Foreign Relations Committee, was found guilty of bribery, wire fraud, extortion, obstruction of justice, conspiracy, and acting as a foreign agent for Israel. This is Prosecutor Damian Williams speaking after yesterday's verdict.
This case has always been about shocking levels of corruption. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes in the form of cash, gold bars, a Mercedes-Benz. This wasn't politics as usual, this was politics for profit. And now that a jury has convicted Bob Menendez, his years of selling his office to the highest bidder have finally come to an end.
He was convicted as a foreign agent for Egypt and the United Arab Emirates. Two Menendez associates, New Jersey businessmen Wael Hanna and Fred Davies, were also found guilty on all counts. Senator Menendez's wife, Nadine Menendez, was also charged in the corruption schemes, but has not yet been tried. Bob Menendez faces years in prison when he's sentenced in October. Eight of his convictions carry possible 20-year sentences. Democrats are calling on Menendez to resign, which would allow New Jersey's Democratic Governor Phil Murphy to fill his vacant seat. If Menendez refuses to resign, he could face expulsion by his fellow senators. As Sudan's warring parties continue to fight for control, UNICEF reports some 50,000 people have fled and sought refuge in the eastern region of Qadarif, with many more expected to arrive in the coming days as they escape the violence. This is UNICEF program coordinator Nasra Islan.
So far, 400 children have been registered here, of which they are receiving several services, including mental and psychosocial support, as we have seen many of the children and families are missing their loved ones here.
In Bangladesh, at least six people have been killed in a wave of student protests over government quotas on public sector jobs. Up to 30% of those positions are reserved for the relatives of soldiers who fought in Bangladesh's independence war against Pakistan in 1971. Critics say the quota unfairly benefits families who support Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina. A number of government jobs are also designated for women, ethnic minorities, and disabled job applicants, but those are not included in protesters' grievances. Schools and universities across Bangladesh have shut down amidst the growing unrest. In France, President Emmanuel Macron has accepted Prime Minister Gabriel Attal's resignation as the government steps down after suffering a major defeat in snap elections Macron called earlier this month. But Attal will stay on as caretaker amidst ongoing uncertainty over a new government, a leftist coalition which came together just days ahead of the July 7th parliamentary election, pulled off a surprise victory and a blow to both the far right and Macron. But the alliance did not secure an outright majority and has since not been able to agree on a candidate for prime minister. Macron, meanwhile, has called on centrist parties to form a ruling coalition. In other news from France, police continue to forcibly remove undocumented immigrants around Paris ahead of the Summer Olympics, which kick off next week. This is Jocelyne, an unhoused Congolese mother.
I have two children, and because we're living on the streets, one feel ill with asthma, so it's very difficult for me with the Olympic Games. We do all of our activities in Paris. What will become of us now? Can anybody find a solution for us?
In more Olympics news, Amnesty International has slammed French authorities over its policy banning its Muslim athletes from wearing headscarves. The group said, quote, banning French athletes from competing with sports hijabs at the Olympic and Paralympic Games makes a mockery of claims that Paris 2024 is the first gender equal Olympics and lays bare the racist gender discrimination that underpins access to sport in France, Amnesty International said. And a new U.S. Senate report finds Amazon Prime Day results in a massive spike in warehouse worker injuries. An investigation by Senator Bernie Sanders' Health, Education, Labor and Pensions Committee found Amazon Prime Day in 2019 led to a whopping 45% of Amazon warehouse workers sustaining injuries. Bernie Sanders said of the findings, quote, Amazon may be a $2 trillion corporation. Its owner, Jeff Bezos, may be worth $215 billion, but that does not give them the right to put their $36 billion in annual profits ahead of the health and safety of their workers. This type of corporate greed must end, Senator Sanders said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. Coming up, new video has emerged of Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, praising conspiracy theorist Alex Jones as a truth teller. Stay with us. By Dirty Three. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. We're broadcasting from Milwaukee from the Republican National Convention. I'm Amy Goodman. Ohio Senator J.D. Vance is preparing to make his first speech tonight after being tapped by Donald Trump as his running mate. Vance will headline the Republican National Convention tonight. On Tuesday, ProPublica published a newly uncovered 2021 speech Vance made a year before he was elected to the Senate. The video shows Vance addressing an invitation-only group of young conservatives. The chair of the group is Leonard Leo. This is part of what J.D. Vance said.
If you listen to Alex Jones every day, you would believe that a transnational financial elite controls things in our country, that they hate our society. And oh, by the way, a lot of them are probably sex perverts, too. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, that's actually a hell of a lot more true than Rachel Maddow's view of society. But then the second criticism that I get is, well, he's a crazy conspiracist, right? He doesn't believe that 9/11 actually happened, or he believed 9/11 was an inside job. And look, I understand this desire to not be called terrible names. It's like, yeah, okay, this person believes crazy things, but I bet if you're being honest with yourself, every single person in this room believes this, at least something that's a little crazy, right? I mean, I believe the devil is real and that he works terrible things in our society. That's a crazy conspiracy theory to a lot of very well-educated people in this country right now. Even though, of course, they participated in it without knowing about it, but that's a separate matter.
During the same 2021 speech to the Teneo Network, J.D. Vance talked about the billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel, who go on to spend over $10 million to help Vance get elected to the Senate in 2022.
Ladies and gentlemen, the most important truths often come from people who are crazy 60% of the time, but they're right 40% of the time. I don't know Elon Musk very well. I know him a little bit. I've had a couple of private conversations with him. Elon Musk believes some crazy stuff. I'm very close friends with Peter Thiel. I think Peter Thiel is one of the most important sources of non-conventional truth in our society. Peter Thiel believes some things that are considered crazy by opinion makers. We have to get away from this weird tension that we feel in our chest when somebody says, this person believes something crazy, therefore you must denounce them.
That was J.D. Vance speaking in 2021. He was elected to the Senate in 22. That video obtained by ProPublica and documented. Joining us now is Andy Kroll, the investigative reporter for ProPublica. His new piece is headlined, In Private Speech, J.D. Vance Said the Devil is Real, and praised Alex Jones as a truth teller. Tell us more about what you found.
Well, we got this video of this 30-minute speech instead of question and answer period with then-candidate J.D. Vance, now Senator and VP designate nominee J.D. Vance, that really gives this unvarnished look into what J.D. Vance believes and into what he says to an audience of his peers, people he sees as leaders, future elected officials, future business people, but all from the conservative movement. We hear him talk about how he believes Tucker Carlson is a leader or possibly the leader of the conservative movement. We hear him again say that Alex Jones is someone who is a truth teller. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is someone who is a non-conventional person who should be defended by conservatives. You really get a sort of rare look at Vance, you know, unvarnished, unfiltered, because again, this was an invitation-only event. There was no press. This was all friends and like-minded conservatives.
I want to go to the next clip, back to more of what Ohio Senator J.D. Vance said before he was senator in this private 2021 speech to the Teneo Network.
For a long time, I'd like to say a lot of us have been talking about this problem, but it's really been a few of us over the past few years who have recognized that the big corporations have really turned against conservatives in a very big and powerful way. And we see this in a number of different ways. You know, one is recently this Texas abortion law. Okay, Texas tries to pass a law that protects the right of the unborn to live their lives. And set aside the legal technicalities about whether that law is ultimately going to survive legal challenges, I don't know. I went to law school, but I went to Yale Law School, so I'm not a very good lawyer. But the fundamental problem revealed itself because virtually every major big corporation in this country felt the need to issue a statement in support of not the unborn babies, but in support of people who might want to abort them. A few major corporations actually put a lot of money behind the effort to make it easier to achieve an abortion. And the one CEO that I'm aware of, a medium-sized tech company who actually spoke up on behalf of the unborn, was fired 3 days later after he issued a statement. Like, if we're unwilling to make companies that are taking the side of the left in the culture wars feel real economic pain, then we're not serious about winning the culture war. And so that is challenge number one.
So, again, that's J.D. Vance in 2021, just before he's elected to the Senate for the first time in 2022. Now in 2024, as a 39-year-old former Marine, he has been tapped to be the vice presidential running mate of President Trump. Talk about the significance of what he says here on abortion, Andy Kroll.
Well, it's significant on a few levels. One, It is a window into his thinking that somehow the largest corporations in America have been captured by the quote-unquote woke left or by political correctness. We're supposed to believe that Amazon or Walmart or United Health or any of these ExxonMobil, any of these major corporations are somehow agents of the Democratic Party or the left, which doesn't really hold up to scrutiny. But the more interesting part is what he says at the end when he says we need to make these companies feel pain if they engage in these culture wars. And I think that gives you a glimpse into how he thinks as an elected official and how he might think and act as a vice president if this ticket is elected. We need to make these corporations feel pain. Well, they'll use the levers of government in theory to do that.
Let's go back to Alex Jones. For people who are not familiar with who he is and the significance of the comparisons he was making between Rachel Maddow and Alex Jones, talk about his record.
Alex Jones is the most notorious conspiracy theorist in America. He rose to prominence promoting conspiracy theories that 9/11 was a government cover-up or an inside job. He spread conspiracy theories about vaccines, conspiracy theories about a quote-unquote New World Order. I mean, he is America's conspiracist in chief. His lies have caught up with him. In recent years, his claims that the Sandy Hook school shooting was a hoax, false flag, led to court judgments against him totaling $1.5 billion brought by the families of the victims of Sandy Hook. So he has been made to quite literally pay. And yet J.D. Vance is saying, this is someone who speaks truth. This is someone who we should defend, even if he has non-conventional or unconventional ideas. And I really think that is an important piece of information to understand about this running mate.
I just want to be very clear on Sandy Hook. He is contending something that the parents wish was true, that this massacre wasn't real, that those murdered children were not murdered, that they're somewhere else, and their parents are actors?
Right. The parents are actors. There was a larger plot at work to use this quote-unquote fake tragedy to seize people's guns or curtail their Second Amendment rights. Of course, none of that is true. Courts in Texas and Connecticut ruled against him in a very aggressive way and, again, issued these judgments totaling $1.5 billion that the parents and their lawyers are now chasing Alex Jones. And Alex Jones may not end up with an InfoWars media company or any of his other properties by the end of this judicial process. So, again, this is the person that J.D. Vance is saying that conservatives need to stand up for.
And how did you get a hold of this tape, and how has the Trump-Vance ticket responded?
So we obtained the tape, our reporting partners documented, and I, as part of a larger reporting project on the Teneo Network. This is a group chaired by Leonard Leo, the legal activist on the right, that is trying to basically replicate what Leo did for the judicial system, which is to say, loading it with conservative originalists and textualists to try to create that pipeline, but in every other area of American life. He wants to do to finance and education and media what he's done to the Supreme Court. Leonard Leo responded to us for this story and said J.D. Vance is and has been and continues to be a member of the Teneo Network, which is an interesting connection for this presidential ticket. The Trump campaign did not respond to the story. We're still hoping that they will, but nothing as of now.
Andy Kroll, tell us about Peter Thiel.
Peter Thiel is a fascinating character. Peter Thiel, obviously a sort of techno-libertarian, definitely someone who has propagated a number of sort of strange idiosyncratic ideas. He was a supporter of Donald Trump's in 2016. He was a mentor to J.D. Vance when Vance was a tech investor, a member of the Silicon Valley elite. And then when Vance ran for Senate in 2022, Thiel was a donor and a big supporter of his. And what's really interesting now is this question of, will Peter Thiel, who has been really on the sidelines of this presidential campaign, will he come off the sidelines now that his protege is Donald Trump's running mate? And that's something that we're certainly looking into with our reporting.
Peter Thiel took down Gawker.
Yeah, it took down Gawker, exactly, with the help of Hulk Hogan in a case that I think, you know, gave chills to all of us who believe in a free and independent media.
I want to go back to one more clip from this tape that you uncovered to the Teneo Network by J.D. Vance just a year before he was elected for the first time to the Senate, speaking in 2021.
Challenge number two is just basic truth-telling. We live in a society that is terrified to tell the truth, and it takes a number of different forms. On the left, people are terrified to actually point out the obvious, that men and women are different, that they want different things, at least as an average matter, and that there are real biological, cultural, religious, spiritual distinctions between men and women. I think that's what the whole transgender thing is about, is like fundamentally denying basic reality.
So, again, that was J.D. Vance. Talk more about the significance of what he's saying here.
I mean, the statement in some way speaks for itself. Denying that transgender Americans, frankly, or transgender people anywhere, just exist, period. That identity, that their experience is not real, is not legitimate. And I think for anyone who is transgender, supports transgender rights, ability to access health care, gender affirming care, you should probably know that J.D. Vance has taken this position and taken this position quite clearly. It doesn't put him out of step with the rest of the Republican Party, frankly, but it does show in the most unvarnished way where he stands on the position of trans rights and trans healthcare.
Also on the issue, last night we were on the floor all night of the Republican National Convention. One of the people who spoke was the Montana senatorial candidate, Tim Sheehy.
Yeah, and he got up for that too.
Right, and said, "I am Tim Sheehy. That's right. Those are my pronouns."
Right.
More often, people, delegates, are saying on the floor, USA, those are my pronouns.
I mean, it's classic culture war reactionary commentary. I think I heard maybe she hears someone else say, end their speech with, "Boys are boys, girls are girls, this is America," to, you know, roaring applause from the audience. I mean, this position on trans Americans and trans rights is clearly something that is both, I think, at the forefront of this election, but also just in the air, a platform-wide position by Republicans in 2024.
Speaking of what's in the air, I wanted to go to what was on the floor of the Republican National Convention last night. We were there talking to people. I spoke with Arizona delegate, State Representative Alexander Kolodin. I caught up with him just after he was heckling Nikki Haley as she took the stage to express her unity with President Trump. At first, the Arizona delegate was cordial.
What do you think of Nikki Haley being up there? It's a little shocking, wasn't it?
It was shocking. I'm glad that she did what she should have done a long time ago, which is drop out and endorse Donald J. Trump for president. I think people like her are poison within the blood of the Republican Party, that they want to co-opt this party, to use it to line the pockets of their defense contractor buddies at the risk of incinerating our children in nuclear war. They are disgusting and reprehensible, and they need to go away.
And what do you think about what happened on January 6th, and particularly talk about Arizona?
In Arizona?
In Arizona, the election, and what position
you took. Who are you a reporter for?
I'm a reporter for Democracy Now! Do you know Democracy Now? It's a daily
I have heard of you guys.
News hour and radio show.
Yeah. I think that you guys have lost your privileges to talk about January 6th after you tried to assassinate our president. I'll leave it at that.
Excuse me?
You said it. You guys have, you Democrats, you have lost your privileges to go on and on and on. I know who Democracy Now! Is, to go on and on and on and on about January 6th when you literally tried to shoot our president, right? First you tried to throw him in jail, then you called him a fascist, then you literally tried to strip Secret Service protection from him, and then you tried to use the deep state to kill the guy. So yeah, you've lost your privileges to talk about January 6th, and that's all I'm going to say on that.
So
matter.
Would you talk about it? What do you think about it?
I think you should stop trying to kill our president. I think you should stop trying to indict him and throw him in jail and deprive the American people of a choice. If you say you're Democrat, stand for democracy and allow the American people to have a real choice.
With that, Arizona delegate and State Representative Alexander Kolodin stormed away. It turns out he was active in attempting to overturn the 2020 election, and also represented Arizona Congressmember Paul Gosar and other connected lawmakers tied to the January 6th insurrection. It was not clear if he knew we were Democracy Now!, public television and radio. Not clear exactly what he was saying, but on Sunday, Kolodin did tweet, "The CIA, FBI got rid of JFK and are trying to get rid of Trump. What do these two men have in common? They took on the deep state and tried to restore the republic." Your response, Andy Kroll?
Well, I'm troubled to hear a delegate, and I believe he's an elected official in Arizona. I'm just going to, from listening to that, take that he understood that you were a reporter, independent media. The fact that he is pointing the blame at journalists doing their jobs, at just asking questions for the attempted assassination of Donald Trump is quite disturbing. And frankly, it's not the first time I've heard this week. I just watched a video this morning of Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene very clearly talking to a reporter from the Times UK and saying that it was the media that deserved blame for this assassination attempt on former President Trump. Of course, we don't know the background, the motives, anything about the actual shooter in this case, but the fact that this is another elected official at this convention who is trying to push this notion that media is to blame for this horrific incident is a deeply troubling thing to hear. And the conspiracy theories, I've written a lot about conspiracy theories. In some ways, those are familiar to my ears. People like this Arizona delegate are a dime a dozen, unfortunately, with these kind of claims. But it's this most recent claim of his about the shooting in Pennsylvania that I think is a dangerous thing to be saying.
I want to turn to another issue, Andy Kroll, and ask you about the Supreme Court. President Biden's reportedly preparing to endorse major changes to the nation's highest court, including establishing term limits and an enforceable code of ethics. Biden's also reportedly considering a call for a constitutional amendment that would eliminate broad immunity for presidents and other officials. Andy, you and other reporters at ProPublica have reported extensively on ethics issues involving Supreme Court justices. Can you talk about this latest news?
The president is trying to do what some of his Democratic colleagues in the Senate have been demanding for more than a year now, which is, number one, some kind of ethics code for the Supreme Court that has teeth, that is enforceable. As we saw last year, the Supreme Court, in response to the reporting that we did and some others did, introduced the first ethics code in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court. But as we pointed out immediately afterward, that ethics code has no enforcement mechanism. It is self-enforcing, which, as we've seen from the behavior of Justices Clarence Thomas, Scalia when he was alive, Alito, this self-enforcing notion does not work with the Supreme Court, and we shouldn't expect it to. President Biden's reported proposal would be an ethics regime that would be enforceable and also term limits. Senators have already introduced a bill that would introduce an 18-year term limit and create a sort of rolling process for the justices to go on and off the court. But this bill or this plan that we've been talking about faces long odds in Congress where it would require approval. With supermajority in the Senate, slim Republican majority in the House, that is a very tough path to take. But it is on some level encouraging that the president has seen the reporting that we've done and others have done and decided that some kind of reform is necessary, because clearly it is from what we've reported and others have done. Mm.
Andy Kroll, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Andy Kroll, investigative reporter for ProPublica. His recent book is titled A Death on W Street, The Murder of Seth Rich and the Age of Conspiracy. We'll link to his new piece for ProPublica. In private speech, J.D. Vance said, "The devil is real," and praised Alex Jones as a truth teller. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency, breaking with convention. Anti-immigrant hate speech and misinformation about the U.S.-Mexico border took center stage on the second day of the Republican National Convention. Their theme, immigration and safety. During the evening, Donald Trump's campaign screened an ad scapegoating migrants and asylum seekers for rising crime in the United States. Stay with us. Thank you.
This is the man responsible for your family's safety. And he's failed you terribly. Biden made one of the worst mistakes of any president in history when he told illegals to come here and surge our border.
I would, in fact, make sure that there is is we immediately surge to the border.
And surge they did. 10 million, more than the population of 40 U.S. states. And Biden's open border became an open invitation for violent Venezuelan gang members, sex traffickers, and now confirmed, ISIS terrorists entered through Biden's wide open southern border, putting America on high alert for an attack. And your family at great risk.
We immediately surge to the border.
But it gets even worse. Biden's incompetence has led to a horrific 300,000 Americans now dead. Not from a nuclear bomb, but from lethal fentanyl brought in through Biden's wide-open border. And on Biden's watch, enough illegal fentanyl has crossed our borders to kill every single American.
Again, that was an ad falsely claiming Biden's so-called open border policies have facilitated the smuggling of fentanyl. In fact, evidence shows fentanyl is largely smuggled by U.S. citizens across U.S. ports of entry. Some of the images that were shown in the ad is of caravans of migrants, many of them families, as they attempt to reach the U.S.-Mexico border to seek relief. For more, we're joined here in Milwaukee by longtime immigrant rights activist Christine Newman-Ortiz, founding executive director of Voces de la Frontera and Voces de la Frontera Action. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy. It's my pleasure.
It's great to be in your city. Can you talk about the feeling here? You have over at Fiserv at the convention center an ad like that that is airing, blaming rising crime and drug abuse in this country on immigrants.
I guess I compare it to when Trump ran in 2016, and I think what was shocking was just this gross generalization of immigrants. It was a real, I'd say, Pandora's box to basically what we've seen, which has been the growth of a far-right movement in the United States, consolidated now under the, now to the present, within the GOP, that led by Trump, self-decried the party of Trump, and whose primary platform is promoting hateful rhetoric, promoting authoritarianism, and promoting violence. And it has become now a white supremacist party and is a real threat to democracy. That's the real threat to democracy, is their record, their rhetoric, and their platform, if they're allowed to achieve a second term. It obviously is best exemplified with their attack against immigrants, which they portray as all cartels, as opposed to immigrants and asylum seekers who are coming to the United States to seek refuge or to contribute to our economy, to contribute to our communities. And that the biggest problem that we have is not this false narrative on crime, which actually goes counter to all of the evidence, just as you said, in terms of like the fentanyl. It is being largely brought in by U.S. citizens at legal ports of entries, or crime in general in areas where there are more undocumented people, and especially where you have policies of that promote public safety, where law enforcement does not play an immigration enforcement role. On the contrary, you have less crime. Those are safer communities. And obviously, it ignores the humanity of immigrants. He recently, made a comment about, well, we're going to have to deport all these people. It's going to be some bad guys, and I'm sure there'll be a good mother there. And then he laughed, and all others laughed with him. And it's that kind of dehumanization, desensitization, and this promotion of these cruel policies of rounding people up and tearing them apart from their families without regard to their humanity or contributions, that I think is the greatest danger and has contributed to hate crimes.
They've continually attacked what they call President Biden and Kamala Harris's open border policy. Is that how you would characterize
it? It's such a joke. It's such a joke.
Because Biden's been so fiercely criticized, especially by progressive movements, for further militarizing the border following through on President Trump, his first term.
Yeah, in fact, it's, since Biden came into office, he actually upheld programs like Title 42, which was a program by Trump and Stephen Miller, also programs like Remain in Mexico, really trying to putting more money onto the border to prevent asylum seekers, working with other governments to try to kind of push them out, and is being sued right now, just as Trump was being sued, because it's in violation of human rights laws. So it is very contrary. The reality is that we, these enforcement-only policies that we have, what the only thing that that has contributed to is actually empowering cartels, because then you've created a black market, and you've also created a humanitarian crisis where people who are already fleeing dangerous conditions, whether that's domestic abuse, cartels, natural disasters, are now prey to these cartels. So we need a legal system for people in the United States who've been here decades, and we need a legal system on our border that's also going to invest in integrating and really amplifying people's full potential, especially in a tight labor market where we need to benefit from more working people. So, that's something that the GOP has also been blocking because they want this crisis to use it to demonize and to run on this platform of hate.
You know, we covered the protest of hundreds of people here in Milwaukee on right before the convention opened. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't compare, it sounds like, to the protests that will take place in Chicago at the Democratic convention. And I'm not talking about Trump supporters. There may be, Trump supporters protesting Biden, but I'm talking about grassroots activists from around the country. Last night, I bumped into Chicago police, and I asked them what were their plans for Chicago. They said it's going to be chaos. You're here, though, critiquing the Trump administration. What would a second Trump term mean following up on a first term when it comes to migrants and asylum seekers?
It's a very serious situation. He is going to fulfill his promise to be dictator on day one, because we have seen his pathway to power through the Project 2025 and the control of all of the federal government agencies by his ideologues.
Go further into Project 2025, particularly as it relates to immigration, this more than 900-page document that Trump says he knows nothing about, but now tape has been unearthed about him praising this project that was coordinated by a number of conservative groups and helmed by the Heritage Foundation.
Yes, and number of those people were Trump advisors in his first administration and have ties to white supremacist organizations. And so a big part of it is actually reflected in the GOP platform. It includes the largest military style deportation of immigrants in this country. And this includes not just people on the border, but it includes people inside the United States that have been here for decades. It also includes eliminating the family-based immigration system that we have, that it's something that many people value, and his supporters as well have also benefited from those programs. That ability to petition a family member. And the other piece is to eliminate a lot of the due process rights that that people would have by these expedited, large detention centers and flying people out immediately, to really eliminate the ability to have legal rights, bringing back these anti-sanctuary policies that would try to take away federal funding from cities or states that have policies, again, that have shown to be promote more public safety by delinking local law enforcement from federal immigration enforcement.
Can you talk about the movement, immigrants' rights movement, how it grew so much out of the Trump administration?
Yeah, I here in Wisconsin, I think one of the things that we saw, as was seen across the country, was a real coordinated effort to implement these sanctuary policies. And it was very beautiful and inspiring to see so many diverse people come together to pass what sometimes are called welcoming centers. For example, here in Milwaukee County, or in the city, or through the sheriff, we were able to link efforts to affirm that our cities are welcoming communities, that we value the diversity of all people, that our schools, certain schools and areas are going to be safe zones so that immigration couldn't just come in and do, you know, raid sweeps. And one of those most important ones, I think, here was the, and it actually was national as well, was a large strike called the Day Without Latinos, if people recall, that was kind of went viral, started here in Wisconsin and then went viral, where workers protested by going on strike to, again, affirm their positive economic contributions. In our case, it was directly related to the effort of this 287G program that was going to be implemented here in Milwaukee County. But because of tens of thousands of people going out in a general strike and large march and then forming coalitions, we were able to drive out the former Sheriff Clark and also get rid of this program. There were also mass protests, of course, as we all know, against the separation of families policy. And this is a program that J.D. Vance, as well as Trump, want to bring back. So they want to fuel everything. And in part, the pandemic had interrupted part of that process. But in a second term, under this new federal control of his people, and, you know, I can, you know, he has definitely said that he wants to bring back those policies. And it's sickening. What does it mean? It means that he celebrates tearing a child away from their parents, in, as they did in these detention centers, deporting them regardless of what their consequences were, also fighting to remove protections for their well-being, whether it's against physical abuse, sexual abuse, you know, just having food and water, proper treatment, all of that. He fought and is fighting to remove so that immigrants don't get that care. So I think it's very disconcerting if we desensitize ourselves to a group of people that he's defining as the other. So when they talk about immigrants, as Trump has said, oh, it's only certain people from certain countries. And then for everybody else, it's these policies of cruelty and mass deportation that would have huge consequences, first and foremost around human rights. And obviously, they're not the only ones that are being targeted, but also around destabilizing our economy, because immigrants, for example, here in Wisconsin, 80% work in the dairy industry. So you would have the collapse of an entire industry. And immigrants are not taking jobs. They're complementing to jobs. And they're actually, you know, have been helping to bring down inflation, have been, you know, when we've had opportunities such as DACA, have been able to fill other types of jobs where they're needed. And that is a benefit for everyone, where we have more teachers, where we have more nurses.
I want to go to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis joking about his efforts tricking asylum seekers when they were being flown to Martha's Vineyard, an island off of Massachusetts in 2022. This is him speaking at the RNC.
Biden is just a figurehead. He's a tool for imposing a leftist agenda on the American people. They support open borders, allowing millions and millions of illegal aliens to pour into our country and to burden our communities. But just don't send any to Martha's Vineyard. Then they get really upset.
So that's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Your response, Christine.
That's a perfect example of the kind of demonization, politicization, and cruelty, real politics affecting real people, where you have people who are asylum seekers fleeing violence, who were tricked into you know, these buses to be dumped off as a political act, regardless of what their you know, of their rights. And also of the opportunity to actually be integrated into society, regardless of. So there's no sympathy. There is, and I think what I would say is that my message is that we cannot not allow a second Trump administration. For me, I look at it not even as the candidates, but as a political movement, a social justice movement. And under which administration are we going to be able to defend the gains that we've made on all kinds of issues, and under which administration are we going to be able to advance our rights? So the question is not so much about the candidates, it's about the social justice movement, and we cannot afford an authoritarian government to come to power, and we must continue to fight, defend what we've achieved, and make sure that we advance on those progress.
How are you organizing in this swing state of Wisconsin for November? 30 seconds.
Three ways. The most important way, Voceros por el Voto, which is our statewide relational voter program through families and friends. It has been packing a punch in every election since 2018, and we're going to continue to build that out. We build that out to 23,000 Latino voters and youth, many of which wouldn't have been involved. And then traditional ways, knocking on doors and talking to people, but the relational program is at the heart of it, and I really encourage other people in other states to do that. It's, you know, who you know, you're the trusted messenger, and you need to get the word out because every vote counts.
Christine Newman Ortiz, founding executive director of Voces de la Frontera and Voces de la Frontera Action. Coming up, the Democratic National Committee is pushing for Joe Biden to be nominated before next month's Democratic National Convention in Chicago, despite growing calls for him to step aside. Stay with us.
Hanging out while the monkeys type away. Admit it's a dump. Our friends are all nuts, and half of them drunks. And if they're not nuts, then they're retired nuts, and that might be the hardest nut. Making plans, the kind that go awry. Got a full lifetime supply. Why? Hatch. You gotta believe that there's related madness from the lead that's in the ceiling wax. We live in a dump, admit it's a dump. Our friends are all nuts, and half of them drunks. And if they're not nuts,
we live in a dump by They Might Be Giants. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the site of the Republican National Convention this week. We've expanded our coverage to 2 hours each day. Check our website or your local station to get the expanded coverage. Over the weekend, California Congressmember Adam Schiff warned donors Democrats would lose the presidency, control of the Senate, and miss out on the chance to reclaim the House unless President Biden steps aside. Adam Schiff, who's running for California's U.S. Senate seat in November, reportedly made the comments during a private fundraising dinner in New York. Despite mounting fears over Biden's ability to beat Trump following his disastrous first debate, Democrats appear to be moving ahead with plans to hold a virtual vote confirming Biden as their nominee weeks before the Democratic National Convention begins in Chicago on August 19th. We're joined now again by John Nichols, the nation's national affairs correspondent. His latest piece is headlined, "If Democratic Leaders Suck the Life Out of Their 2024 Convention, and they will damage party prospects in November." So, John, we had you back on. We bumped into you yesterday. We were going into the convention last night. You were going out. We were asking you where you're going. You said you were here to cover the RNC, but you found yourself spending so much of your time dealing with the Democrats. Why is that? What exactly is happening?
Sure. It's a big story. In fact, in some ways, it might be as big or bigger a story than what we're dealing with right here, because next month Democrats will gather in Chicago and they're renominating a president. That's supposed to be a pretty standard, almost boring procedure, except, of course, we have all the controversy with Biden. Now, here's the interesting thing. The Democratic National Committee and apparently the Biden campaign have been agitating for quite a while now to move the roll call vote, which is supposed to take place during the convention in late August, up to, initially they talked about sometime around August 7th. Now they're talking about moving it to perhaps as soon as next week. So Joe Biden could be nominated for president next week, even though the convention's almost a month away.
Wait a second. If you can explain, because this is a time, it's sort of a very colorful thing at both the RNC and the DNC. Yeah. Each state says we nominate, they wear cheese on their head, they do whatever. No offense to you,
it's
here
not
in
actually
Wisconsin.
Cheese. It's a styrofoam cheese.
Right.
Hat.
And each one hails their state, but then nominates their candidate. Now, we had first heard that they wanted to get away from this in Democratic convention because they were concerned about protests, perhaps around Gaza. But this has become snowballed into something. And then they said Ohio needed this approval before they could what? And now what's happening?
No, you're summing it up well, because what you just said sounded a little confusing. And not because of you, but it's because it is confusing. And in a sense, an argument can be made that some of the Democratic power brokers have decided to sort of create a confusion, right? To create a circumstance where people are like, oh, this sounds kind of messy. Maybe we ought to just lock it in before the convention, get it all done. And the initial argument they had was that the state of Ohio had an early deadline and that you had to meet that deadline. It was before the convention to get your candidate on the ballot, right? So that's a big deal, and that's important. You don't want to not be on the ballot in Ohio, except that Ohio very clearly said, nope, we'll give you a waiver till September 1. So everybody who's serious about this says that's off the table. That's not a problem. So then they, you know, after that was done, it should have been off, right? We should have said, okay, go to the convention, do it normal. No, instead, they keep agitating, and they sometimes keep bringing up the Ohio thing, say, you know, saying, oh, well, we don't know. We don't know if we can trust the Ohioans, right, or something like that. End result is that what we know is right now, DNC folks, as well as Democratic Party, you know, folks associated with the Biden campaign, appear to be going ahead with an effort to get the DNC to set a so-called virtual roll call date. That would be sometime perhaps next week. And you would then have a situation where Biden and presumably Harris are renominated. So by the time you got to the convention, the main point of the convention, now I know conventions are now theater and lots of speeches and blah, blah, blah. But at a fundamental level, the main point of the convention is a nominating process. You choose someone to run for president, someone to run for vice president. You establish a platform for them to run on. If you take all of that energy out of it a month before, two things happen. Number one, you potentially silence the efforts to question whether Joe Biden should be the nominee. That's a serious issue because it's much discussed. The polling is very concerning to many Democrats. But you also do something else. You basically create a format, a template for the convention where there is no dialogue, where there is no debate, where those 35 or more delegates who were elected uncommitted to raise the issue of Gaza aren't put in a position where they can raise it, where the platform isn't debated. And I will tell you something, Amy. I am a historian of Democratic Party. I wrote a book about it. And the Democratic Party benefits by exciting and engaged conventions. It doesn't harm the Democratic Party. It won't even harm Joe Biden if it's an engaged and exciting convention. He comes out of it well. What will harm the Democratic Party is if they so dumb down, so diminish this convention that when people get to Chicago, it's sort of, you know, everything's been done but some speeches.
So when it comes to the Democratic National Convention, you have President Biden saying what during his NATO press conference, mm-hmm. delegates can vote their conscience. What does that mean?
Well, depending on whether we believe it, you know, and I'm not questioning Joe Biden per se, but it is a relatively formal step to release your delegates, right? To say, well, you can vote for who you want. Now, it seemed in some people's interpretation that that's what he was saying. I'd like to see a little more backup on that before it actually happened. But essentially, that's what Nikki Haley did. Nikki Haley said that her delegates at this Republican convention were released. They could vote for who they wanted. They voted primarily for Donald Trump. But the challenge on this at the Democratic convention works like this. Most of Biden's delegates would probably vote for him, no matter what. There's a great loyalty to Biden. So he'd probably get a substantial portion of that vote. But some of them might organize an effort to say, hey, we're concerned.
I mean, that is growing.
That's
at
right.
this point.
And so if indeed they were released, I think you would see the prospect of a substantial vote for someone else, for an alternative. And again, if you think this is unprecedented, it's not. In 1948, when Harry Truman was seeking his first term as president, he had taken over for Franklin Roosevelt, he was very unpopular. His polls were terrible.
The party
was divided. They had a very intense convention. They actually put a civil rights plank in, and lo and behold, he won. The intensity actually helped Truman win. It didn't hurt him. Mm.
John Nichols, the nation's national affairs correspondent, will link to his new article. If Democratic leaders suck the life out of their 2024 convention, they will damage party prospects in November. That does it for our expanded two-hour broadcast each day from the Republican National Convention. We are accepting applications for a director of development to lead our fundraising efforts. Check it out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hello, WPFW.
Summertime is here. Words Beats in Life and Arts for Everybody have the event for your family and friends this season. DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 27th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. Featuring musical acts, Chuck Brown Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Substantial, Belladonna, DuPont Brass, and just added, The Blackbirds, celebrating 50 years of their classic, Rock Creek Park, plus four more music and dance stages.